I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today is Tony Samara, author of Shaman's Wisdom, The Simplicity of Love Meditation, Different Yet the Same, Karma, Matra, and Beyond, and Discover Your Inner Buddha. He was born in England, grew up in Egypt, England, and also in Norway, where he discovered the Zen Buddhist philosophy. This discovery eventually led him to the Mount Baldy Zen Center in California, USA, where he learned the spiritual teachings of Kaizen, Jashu, Sasaki, Rashi. He was curious to explore further the essence of spirituality and thus went to live and learn with shamanic communities around the globe. By going on pilgrims to various sacred sites in India, Tony was able to dwell deeply upon the ancient Vedic and Jain philosophies and work profoundly with the essence of these teachings. Now people from all over the world visit Tony Samara to take spiritual guidance and experience being in his presence. His main country of activities are in Europe, yet with the assistance of the internet, he is attracting a global audience through frequent online interviews and live satsangs. His function is as a spiritual master who encourages all to lead their lives actively in a noble way in order to realize the evolution of human consciousness. Tony is a mirror of what is possible, a shining reminder of the continuous possibilities of being human. More information is available at www.tonysamara.com and on this website. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Tony, and I look forward to hearing about your spiritual journey. Now, first, can you tell us how you arrived on a spiritual path?
Okay, yes, I'm happy to be on your show, and it's quite a long story, so I'll shorten it a little.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, from right at the beginning, from when I remember, I was interested in how things function and why they function in certain ways. So mm-hmm. I was a very inquisitive child, always looking for answers, and having read many books and looked into different modalities of understanding the world, I came across meditation and yoga, which sparked my interest to look a little bit deeper into what meditation really means in a practical sense and what yoga really means in a practical sense. And that basically was the beginning of my spiritual journey. I think we all are spiritual people, so we all begin in different with different modalities and different ways of understanding the world. But for me, it was through the practice of meditation.
Well, that's a good way to start, I think.
I think so, at such a young age, yes.
Right. Now, Tony, when you were age 27, you had a spiritual enlightenment experience. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. It's such a difficult word, you know, enlightenment, because it creates this preconceived idea, which I don't really quite like. Mm-hmm. But I would say enlightenment or awakening or just realization means that you see things from a completely different perspective. So that was my experience, that I just, everything turned upside down and I could see the world from just a new perspective, and that new perspective can be described as a connection or a deeper understanding from the heart that is difficult to put into words, but that mystics like Rumi and Kabir and the many wonderful mystics that have written poetry in the past describing this experience put it across as just a sense of deep connection with the very core of the universe. And this is what I felt at the age of 27. It was just a shift of consciousness that allowed me to see things from a totally new perspective that wasn't quite so new, but it was very different from what I was used to, because it's like waking up to life, and then you know you've been here before because, you know, you've fallen asleep and then you've woken up and you remember that you were awake before you fell asleep. So it's not so new. It was just more a remembering of a state of consciousness. It's difficult to put into words, but from that moment, basically, there was a sense of positivity and a sense of curiosity and awe about everything that wasn't present before.
And can everyone have this experience?
I think everyone can have this experience and probably has this experience without realizing. I believe very much that we have awakening experiences during deep sleep, when we have what is known by scientists as the REM aspect of sleep, when it is very difficult for the mind to remember exactly what you're experiencing because you're so deeply into that experience that the reference isn't as clear because you're totally immersed in that experience. And that is what many mystics also say when going through an awakening experience, that it is difficult to put into words because there is no reference. You're so totally immersed in that experience that you don't have the normal mind functioning in that dualistic sense and saying, well, this is what it is because it compares to my reference in this way. To answer your question, I think everyone has these experiences, but just we don't remember.
I think sometimes too, Tony, we don't have a name for it, because I remember once I said to my mother, "Do you meditate?" And she said, "What's that?" And I described it. She said, "Oh, I've done that all my life." But I didn't know there was a name for it.
Exactly. And I think children also have awakening experiences, but it's totally natural to have such an experience that they don't define it as an unusual experience that they then label as enlightenment or label as different from what they're going through as an experience of life. And as you bring up your mother's example of meditation, I think many people also have meditational experiences or experiences where our state of consciousness just is so immersed in that which we are experiencing that we call it something such as love, or just a moment where we were so totally in that experience that we forgot to worry or to stress or to be anxious about the mundane aspects of life that we normally are preoccupied with, and we don't have a name such as meditation or awakening for such an experience. But we have them. We have them because we're human.
Tony, you and others have said that our thoughts create our reality. Can you tell us about this process?
Yes. The main thing I speak about in meditation and when explaining what meditation is to different people from different walks of life is the process of thinking and the process of awareness, and how our focus changes everything. And the practice of meditation is a state of awareness or being mindful of the situations that are happening around, inside of you, within your thinking process, feeling process. And when you have the ability to do this, then your focus is present in this moment. So if we are present to our thoughts, then our thoughts are not manipulating our ways of interacting with ourselves or others to fall into a certain pattern or a repetitive pattern that then creates a structure within the mind. This could be the neurons firing and wiring in a certain way, or within our emotional body. It could be just an attitude or a belief system that we hold as very important, but perhaps is just us focusing in a wrong way. So I think that the way that we are able to utilize the mind and the thinking process within the mind is very important. Mm-hmm. But we don't know how to do this because for most people that's an automated process. You know, we just walk down the street and something happens and then our thinking is just an automatic response to whatever it is that is going on in our lives. But actually we can empower our thinking so that it is present within the state of awareness or mindfulness that then means that we can focus the energy in a very specific direction. And that specific direction I call just being open-minded and open to all possibilities, basically one's potential, mm-hmm. rather than just one's repetitive thinking or one's way of understanding the world because of belief systems or because of certain structures in the body that then develop according to those thoughts. So, for example, we're stressed, our body will be tense, our emotions will be on edge, and that structure, if we get comfortable with, becomes just a pattern that we repeat mm-hmm. Without even knowing. And so that influences our thoughts, and our thoughts influences that structure, and it just becomes a way of a personality or a way of dealing with life or interacting with life that is very limited. So I've mm-hmm. sort of circled around your question a mm-hmm. little bit. But so in the end, it all depends on our thinking. If we're positive, if we just trust mm-hmm. our thoughts and go a little bit deeper than the negative problems that the mind likes to focus on because it has this quality which is known in neuroscience as a negative bias, then we can touch upon our potential and empower ourselves simply by remembering that one thought can change everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in cancer, and okay. I'm wondering if we can create our cancer, or is cancer a karmic lesson that we have to learn, or do these somehow work together?
Well, I know, having worked with native people, I spent a long time in the Pacific, on some Pacific islands in mm-hmm. Tahiti and Samoa and New Caledonia. These are beautiful, unspoiled places around the world, the busy world that we live in today. You know, they are sort of havens of tranquility and a place where people don't have the stresses and worries that we have today. And I also spent a long time in the Amazon forest working with shamans mm-hmm. Where I noticed there is much less cancer mm-hmm. than in the Western world. So for me, that immediately says that there is something in the way that we're living in modern society, the way that we live here in the Western world, that makes cancer much more likely than it should be. Mm-hmm. And whether that be because of the pollution or because of the chemicals that we are utilizing today that have never been part of the ecosystem, or whether that be because of just the emotional and mental stress that the complex society that we have to interact with creates within children and within adults and within just having to be part of what is going on, or whether it be a combination of factors that we in mm-hmm. the West are exposed mm-hmm. to, that such as mobile phones and radiation mm-hmm. and I don't know what, you know, there are so many things that mm-hmm. we can look at today, or whether it be the fact that native people or people living in societies where things are simpler are more happy. They're just more happy with everything. You know, mm-hmm. they smile and they have time to smile mm-hmm. and they have mm-hmm. time to just enjoy themselves. It's difficult to say, you know, and be too dogmatic and say this is the reason. I personally believe that a lot of cancer is caused by stress, worry, mm-hmm. and the way that we think, mm-hmm. and the way that we perceive the world. Mm-hmm. Even though I do believe that pollution and the modern society creates some cancers, I think most of the cancers that we suffer from today, but this is just my personal opinion, mm-hmm. most of the cancers that we suffer from today are because we are not so happy.
Mm-hmm.
Deeply,
right,
if we go deeper into our subconscious and into our emotional body, there is a level of unhappiness in the Western world that is hidden behind the materialism and the busyness of everyday living that is still there, and at mm-hmm. some point somehow affects many, many people and creates an imbalance, which is what cancer is.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting, your discussion, because I have a public health background, and in public health we, you know, say that there are multiple factors that lead up to a disease process, and public health looks at it as factors in the host, factors in the environment that bring the host and the agent together, and factors in the agent. And so I have just finished, or I'm finishing, the section on prevention for my Cancer Foundation website. And what I have looked at is many of the things that you've just mentioned. I've looked at the toxic metals. I've looked at the toxic chemicals. I've looked at ultraviolet rays. And then I've looked at things that the individual can do. Physical activity, nutrition, the water you drink, the supplements you take, your immune system and things you take to build up the immune system, getting adequate sleep, are you smoking, things like that. But then I also look at the things that you also brought up. Do you use affirmations? Are you compassionate? Do you have faith? Do you have gratitude? Do you meditate? Are you optimistic? Do you pray? Do you visualize? You know, these, to me, are all part of the whole. And when I had lung cancer, I believe that my prayer and my optimism were just as important as my diet and as the things that I took to kill the cancer cells. So
yeah.
I think it is a holistic approach that, you know, is triggered by all of these things, like if you don't get adequate rest and your diet is off and you're going to the tanning booth all the time and you're smoking and you're doing all of these negative things, sooner or later, these things are going to come together and create what we call cancer. And maybe, as you say, the people in these islands, Samoa and all the other islands, they don't have these stresses, and they don't, and they're happy, and they're probably they have faith, and they're optimistic, and they have some of these things that are very positive that really would outweigh, you know, some of them. And their diet, I'm sure, is a lot better than what we've got in, at least in the United States.
And also, and they have a social system that supports them. And I find that in the Western world, the basis of our identity is very individualistic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when an individual doesn't have a connection, you know, say, for whatever reason, you retire or, you know, you just don't fit into a social system, then you're alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a healthy way of living. And in native societies or in more primitive societies, there is a social structure where everything is part of an ecosystem and there is a connection to everything. And if we lose that connection, then there is a natural sense of loneliness, unhappiness, a sense of, you know, why am I, what is my purpose? And really that causes all sorts of things. Lack of sleep, as you were saying, which is a major problem in the Western world. Many people just don't sleep or don't have enough of the REM sleep, which is the sleep that actually heals the body and detoxes the body so that the cells come back into balance. And there are stresses and anxieties, so the body is in constant sort of fight or flight mode. And for no reason, there is no obvious reason, that there's nothing to run away from. You know, it's just an internal mechanism that's become chronic. And, you know, there are all these situations that we're dealing with that seem normal because that is how we perceive reality to be. You know, everyone has to stress because it's hard work to earn a living and because the economic situation at the moment is creating more stress. And we just accept it rather than empower ourselves to change these little things that you were mentioning, all these little things from exercise, sleep, diet, drinking water, getting enough sleep, so that we can come back into a sort of happy state of mind and a balanced state of mind, which is what meditation is, you know, empowering yourself to be grateful and happy that everything is as beautiful as it is, if you can see it.
Tony, you mentioned social support, and that is so important, and in a crisis situation, it's one of the things that will determine whether you go into, you know, crisis or not, and the social support system that you have. But I agree that in most people, if you are isolated and don't have a social support system, you will experience loneliness. But do you think that there are maybe people who don't necessarily need that social contact as much as most people do, and that you compensate for it by, let me see, how do I say it, by some of the other spiritual attributes, you know, like...
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I do think when you reach a certain point of spiritual practice that your connection to the social system or the social perspective of life, you know, people, goes beyond that. So you connect to many more things. So I remember, for example, when wandering around the Andes at the age of 26, just feeling so deeply connected to the beautiful mountains and the nature and the ecosystem. It was so pure and powerful that there was no need for... I didn't feel lonely, even though I didn't connect to so many people because I was a tourist, or not a tourist, but just... My family didn't live in South America. They were far away in Europe. So, you know, I do understand what you're saying, and I think actually cancer and various sicknesses can often force us to look at life from a different perspective and connect to life in a deeper way. So we begin to appreciate qualities that we never recognized before because we were so busy in that social system, so busy with our children or with our work or with people around us, our friends or whatever it was that was important becomes less important because we develop a more, not more mature, but more a deeper perspective to relationship than just speaking to someone or being with someone. And I think this is very, very important and very healing, and sometimes more healing than having people around who don't really understand what you're going through.
Right.
And that's very often the case. If, you know, people react if you have cancer or if you suffer from something that they are that they can't experience except through the pain that they are sort of projecting or sometimes believing the situation to be, then that's not helpful because it doesn't empower the person to move to a more positive state of consciousness. It just brings that person down to that sort of fear mentality, which sometimes nature just is so much more healing in a way that people sometimes just aren't. You know, I know, for example, people say that my dog was the most beautiful friend I ever had during the crisis because they were just present without the judgment, without the sort of ups and downs that people can go through. And, you know, some people say just opening my window and looking out of my window and seeing the beautiful nature just brought another perspective to my disease that people just don't understand, or most people don't understand. So, yes, I agree. It's about connection rather than just connection with people. Yeah.
I've noticed that a lot of people that have cancer, once it's over, they have a great need to share that experience with others in order to help others.
Yeah.
And I've noticed this more with cancer than with any other disease. I don't know why.
Yes.
Whether it's because it's so prevalent in the population and people are more willing to talk about it. I know when I was a child, people never could even say the word. They would just say the C, you know.
Yes.
And my mother had cancer when I was in high school. But it was almost like a communicable disease because people didn't even want to talk about it. But now I guess it's so much out there. People are all sharing all of what they did and wanting to help others. And I think that is maybe a shift in their consciousness in order to serve others in some way.
And I do think, as you say, when someone goes through such a profound experience where life and death, it's not just a concept, it's a reality, and you really have to prioritize what is important and simplify your life so that, you know, all those mundane things that take up too much time are put aside and what is important is focused upon, that sort of experience needs to be shared simply because that is not what people do. People are busy doing everything other than that. And even with cancer, I see many people, because I work with people also, not just utilizing meditation, but people come and ask me about various aspects such as healing cancer. And I see people very busy, and I say the first step is to really simplify and prioritize that which is important in your life so that there isn't all these practical things that take up too much time. And sometimes someone who's gone through that experience, such as yourself or people like you mentioned now, people who have gone through cancer, can communicate or transmit that in a way that is impossible, you know, if it was just someone, a doctor or a therapist, you know, who hasn't gone through that experience. You know, it just makes sense when it's transmitted directly from someone who's had that experience. And I think that's really important because it creates a sort of understanding that allows for people to change. That is what cancer is about. I believe, you know, it's asking you to change many things in your life. To change means you have to really come back down to a level of understanding that is different from the one that created the cancer. I'm not saying that, you know, the cancer is created just by one's thinking, but, you know, one's thinking is structured around that disease.
Right.
So you have to sort of take a quantum leap away from that mode of thinking to come back down to a healing mode of thinking, and that is transmitted more easily by people who have gone through the experience and healed themselves from cancer, or at least, you know, managed to help themselves prevent the cancer from going further, because sometimes the cancer is there in the body, but in a state where it's not mutating.
Right.
It's just in the background.
Well, one thing I've noticed, too, is that a lot of the people that want to go out and share are people who started with traditional medicine and were given like 3 months to live or 6 months to live, and they were offered chemo or surgery, which are very devastating, invasive procedures. And many of these are people that discovered that there are less devastating, less invasive procedures, and that a lot of it revolves around diet and the things that I mentioned earlier, avoiding certain things, but also adding certain things in your life. And I think that probably there's a lot of gratitude there also, because they did survive when they were told they wouldn't, and they also did not have to go through the things that were so devastating that they thought they were going to have to go through. And as a result of overcoming cancer without all of that negative, that there's a lot of gratitude that helps them want to share with others. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. And there are many options out there that most of us don't know about. And, you know, if someone who has had the cancer, you know, and has had cancer and was told they have 3 months to live and actually healed the cancer using something other than chemotherapy, says, look, this is what I did. This is how I healed my cancer. It's not a guarantee that it will heal every cancer, but it worked for me. Then people tend to listen because it's something that it's not just... Because there is a lot of information out there that I believe to be a little bit...
Right.
It's written by people, I don't know, I don't think they even know what cancer means. And how do you know what is right and how do you know what is
right?
It's much more powerful when it comes from someone who has gone through the experience and they say, look, I changed my diet. I just cut out processed food and I started to exercise and I started to sleep a little bit more and I started to think about life in a more positive way. And, you know, they have a they have a map of how to do this and they explain it to the person and they say, look, try it. And the person... you know, tries doing some of those things or all of those things and perhaps begins to feel better, and then they are motivated to continue. I'm not saying that medical, you know, surgery or chemotherapy is good or bad, because for some people, there is no other option in their mind. You know, some people say chemotherapy is the way, you know, and okay, you explain that chemotherapy is radiation and it harms the body, but... perhaps, you know, it slows down the process so that it gives them enough time to adapt to a new way of thinking, to change their diet and to change their life, which otherwise they wouldn't have enough time to do that. So, you know, everyone has to make that decision themselves.
I agree.
It's difficult to say what is right or what is wrong, but for sure what is not explained by the medical profession are the alternatives. You know, sometimes, it's, at least in Europe, sometimes you, when you have cancer, you know, you see the doctor and the doctor says, you know, this is what we can do for you. And there isn't so much information about anything else. So it's very useful for someone like yourself to explain to people that there are many, many options. But of course, in the end, it's for the person to decide what is right for them. These are the options.
And I agree.
And, yeah, and meditation is one of them, which, you know, if you say to someone, meditate because you have cancer and it's very useful, you know, it's, it just doesn't compute in some people's minds, you know, meditate. You know, I really, it's an urgent situation. I'm having to deal with something that is life-threatening here. I have cancer. And meditation, you know, I'll do that later. But actually, you know, meditation is like diet or like exercise. As soon as you put it into practice, it changes the biochemistry of the body. I was reading a scientific journal today, and it was speaking about mindful meditation, mindfulness, and diabetes. And the doctors were testing people who are meditating, and they found out there was a real reduction in the markers that measure diabetes and an improvement that could be seen, you know, and it was remarkable. It doesn't cure diabetes, but it helps. It's one of those things that you can do that can help you. And I think that's a wonderful thing, you know, that we just explain all these things are possible, and if you can put all those things into practice, then... you know, you're doing a wonderful thing for your body and for your mind and for your emotions. But if you don't know, how do you put it into practice?
And that's why I think that, you know, it's important for patients to know that there are alternatives. As you say, the traditional is they will give you the three options, but they don't tell you that there are these other options out there. And that's why I try to make a big point of getting the information out so that people have all the alternatives so that they can make the decision that's best for them. And my own brother, when he developed lung cancer last year or 2 years ago, he went with radiation. But I asked him, I didn't try to change that, but I did ask him if he would take the Laetril, which is what I took. And he said, yes, he would, but his memory is so bad, I don't think he remembered to take it most of the time. And he didn't make it. But at least it was his choice. And I think it's empowering for an individual to make a choice and have that supported.
And I think whatever the choice, like you're saying now, whatever the choice you make, it is important to support the person in that choice.
Right.
And the tendency in the alternative world that I see is to create this, you know, this is the better thing to do, and, you know, why don't do anything else, and if you do something else, you don't really understand what you're doing. And in the end, you can't disempower people by, you know, creating a belief system that this is good or this is bad. In the end, only the person themselves knows what's right for them, for themselves, and only that person can make a decision. And doctors also need to know this, because sometimes the pressure from the medical system is to make a choice that is more biased towards the medical system. You know, are you sure you don't want to take, like, do a surgery or undergo chemotherapy? And it's sort of, it's like putting the individual in that state of mind where they're sort of thinking, I'm doing something wrong here. But in the end, you know, all the information should be put out there, and the person just asks, what do you feel comfortable doing? You know, and would you want to combine two things together? You know, because you can sometimes, you know, you can create an integrated approach to healing, which uses medicine and alternative medicine and mind-body medicine. There are so many options, you know, and in the end, I think it's all about just giving the choice to the person and then empowering that possibility for them to make their decision and stay clear that that decision is what they want to do, and, you know, supporting them throughout the process with that decision.
Now, Tony, you put a lot of emphasis on meditation and breathing. And can you tell us about the yes breathing?
Well, I'm just laughing a little here. How do I summarize it? So I suppose what we've spoken about now, the yes breathing is just saying yes to the beauty of life. Bringing your breathing, the physical breathing system, to believe in that yes. Because very often we will say, oh yes, the world is beautiful, but then I look at people and I see the way that they're breathing doesn't correspond to the words that they're saying or thinking or writing down. Their body structure is not in alignment with the information that they're speaking out to the world. So they will say, yes, I am healing my body, and yes, I feel connected to life, but deep inside, the breath shows that they're disconnected with life and disconnected with the trust that needs to go to that depth to say yes to life. So the yes breath is just bringing into alignment your physical body, your emotional body, and your mental body to a state of clarity where you are open to the healing that is within the universe. So you're saying yes to that healing, because deep, deep inside, I believe that the universe is very compassionate and very beautiful, very giving and very loving, as Jesus spoke about in many of the mystical parables that he was explaining to his disciples, many disciples. You know, love is the core of everything, but we don't believe it. We don't believe it in our minds. We don't believe it in our bodies. You know, we're acting as if we're not in that state of receptivity, where we can receive that love from the universe. We're acting as if we're separate. So the yes breath is just to bring those three aspects, mind, body, and emotions, into a receptive state where we can just connect to the life force that is within love or within the universe and manifest that in our breathing and then transmit that energy into all aspects of those, the mind, the body, and the emotions, of all those energy channels within the mind, within the body, and within the emotions, so that there is a sense of life force, or what some mystics call the kundalini life force or the prana, that just brings about a sense of energy and empowerment that makes you feel great, blissful, joyful, happy. And this is the description of it, but in a practical way, how do we do this? It's simple. It is just relaxing the diaphragm and breathing in a circular way so that the breath isn't shallow, so you're not breathing in through the chest like most people do, but you're breathing down into the abdomen and making sure that you're breathing, as you breathe in through the abdomen, that the diaphragm is relaxed and that you breathe fully so the chest expands. And it, when you breathe in that full way, that's called a yes breath. You're just breathing in a very full, complete way that is not normal when we're stressed or full of anxiety or when we're not receptive to the world and its beauty, when we're caught in our own little thoughts, in our own little thoughts or our own little picture that then creates a sense of fear, which then makes us breathe shallow breaths into the chest or breathe in a very disconnected way or breathe in a way where the ratio of breath is not harmonious, so we're not breathing in enough oxygen and we're not letting go of all the gases that need to be let go of because we're holding the breath in a certain way. I'm describing it mm-hmm. in a very populistic way so that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not using scientific terms because it's just easier for people to understand that, you know, the nature of breathing has changed. In modern society, we breathe in a way that is very different from native people and very different from that of a little child. Mm-hmm. You know, if you watch a baby breathing in the first few months of life, that is what I'm talking about. That's a yes breath. Mm-hmm. It's just breathing beautifully, so relaxed. There is no tension. There is just an openness that is lost as we get caught in just the everyday mundane aspect of living that creates the stress and anxiety that we have to deal with physically.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tony, the other area that I think you find important, and that is detoxing. Can you tell us a bit about the process of detoxing? I hear people talk about detoxing, but I don't know much about it.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the most powerful ways to detox, and this is what I say to people, before doing anything, mm-hmm. just make sure that you're sleeping at least 8 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most powerful detox for your average person.
Mm-hmm.
Just sleep well, you mm-hmm. know, and one thing to do is, for example, detoxification means that you prepare your body for detoxification. So before sleep, just make sure, like the hour before you fall asleep, make sure you turn all the computers and iPhones and iPads and all these electronic gadgets off
mm-hmm.
so that the brain can begin to prepare for deep sleep, produce melatonin and produce all the hormones that prepare you for sleep. And most people are still on their phone. Even I think people take their phone to bed and, you know, they're SMSing or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're doing, but, you know, they're doing all sorts of things just before sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And that stimulates the brain so that you don't get that deep sleep. So even though you sleep 8 hours, you don't have the right type of sleep that allows for detoxification of the brain and of the body. So if one wants to detox, this is the first step.
Mm-hmm.
And what it means, it just gives your body enough energy to create balance. So all the cells and all the toxins that are released just as a natural process of change that happens in the body all the time. Every minute of your life, the body is changing, all the cells are changing, and have enough energy and space to detox, meaning to let go of free radicals and to let go of whatever it is that is causing an imbalance in the body, and to heal mm-hmm. the body. This mm-hmm. is why sleep is so important, because it heals the brain and it heals the organs, the liver, the kidneys, the heart. This is why people feel good after they mm-hmm. have a good night's sleep, because the body is just rejuvenated, and you're making yourself younger just when you allow yourself that sort of deep sleep, because all the cells are just rejuvenated because the toxins have been let go of when sleeping. So this is one mm-hmm. easy way that you can detox without, there is no cost to it. It's mm-hmm. just a matter of making a decision, okay, this is what I want to do, and this is important. And we can detox also through exercise. You know, the fact that people sit down most of the day mm-hmm. today, you know, this is what people do. They just sit down in front of the computer working, or they sit down in their office doing whatever it is, or sit down at home watching TV, or sit down to eat, or sit down to read. We don't move the lymphatic system. We don't move the fluids within the lymphatic system enough to allow for detoxification. So movement is really important, and it's a natural thing that children do, and also native people do. They walk, or mm-hmm. they just exercise more than mm-hmm. most people. You know, it's incredible. People don't even, you know, do anything nowadays. You know, we have all this free time, but we just sit. Most of our free time, we just sit around doing things that mean that the body is cramped and constricted in a way that is not natural. It's not a natural posture. It's not a natural way of holding your body. So the organs and the lymphatic system just don't function mm-hmm. in a way which allows for detoxification. Mm-hmm. So these two things are simple things that people can do, just incorporate in their everyday lifestyle to detox. But specifically what I do is I encourage people to eat healthy food. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think this is something that is perhaps take a bit too much time to explain today, but mm-hmm. You know, if the first step is to move away from processed food mm-hmm. and eat food in its natural state as much as possible. So this means, instead of buying everything frozen or instead of buying everything in a tin, just enjoying fruits and vegetables and incorporating that in your diet a lot more than people do mm-hmm. today. You know, mm-hmm. it's not about just pasta with tomato sauce. It's about, you know, just enjoying the different tastes of nature and just exploring that by utilizing the natural foods that are around. And we don't have that relationship anymore. So this is what I explain in some of the workshops and the seminars. How do we build up a relationship with food where we are excited about nurturing our body in a way that allows for detoxification by mm-hmm. eating more fruits and more vegetables and drinking more water and hydrating the body. It's so very easy to then create detoxification in the body, because then the body just has the right minerals and the right nutrients to strengthen itself and mm-hmm. And to heal. And, you know, very often by doing this, the cancer that is there, because actually cancer is something that is happening in the body all the time, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. doesn't develop to a stage where it becomes obvious and chronic. The cells are mutating and there are a few cancerous cells, but because there is a sense of balance in what you're eating and your body is rested and your body is exercised, then that cancer just doesn't develop further than just a few cells mutating, and then the body looks after that so that everything continues to be healthy. But if we don't do that, if we, for example, like you say, smoke, sit down and become obese and forget to exercise and don't sleep, stay up late and get caught in just everyday living stress and anxiety, then that mutation sometimes goes unnoticed. and our body is telling us, get up, exercise, eat more healthy, but we don't recognize the signals because we're asleep to them. We're so caught in what is happening around us, we don't listen to our bodies, and we don't listen to those signals that the bodies are transmitting to us, and then it gets chronic and it becomes such a problem, and then we have to listen because we're in pain. You know, but by that time, it is so much more difficult to heal the body. So this is why I say detoxification is important, because it's a natural thing that people do, you know, in native societies. They do this. They walk. They breathe in fresh air. They eat healthy food. They sleep when the sun goes down. They, you know, they do all these things without thinking, you know, why am I doing these things? They just do it because that's what people do in such places.
Now, Tony, then, would you tell us about your books and CDs and conferences and how the listeners can reach you?
Yes, there is a website, www.tonysamara.com. Tony Samara is my name, and it's just .com. And that explains everything. There is a page which has information about nutrition, exercise, meditation, and there are some free videos there that people can listen to, just highlighting various topics. There is information in some of the books that are available on Amazon.com. If you look up Tony Samara, there is a book called Detoxification, which is all to do with the energy systems of the body and different foods that you can incorporate into your diet and different exercise that you can easily do at home. There is a book called The Simplicity of Love Meditation, which is all about meditation and how to go more to incorporate meditation into your everyday living, not just as an exercise, but just as a way of thinking and a way of being. There are many, many books in different languages, in English, Japanese, French, different languages. So that's on Amazon.com. YouTube has wonderful videos, but all that is basically highlighted on the website. And I don't do so many seminars anymore, but there is one. The next one is happening during the March, I think the 18th of March to the 21st of March in Portugal, so Europe. So I'm not sure if your listeners are all from the United States.
No, they aren't. They're from all over. So they're probably some from Portugal.
Ah, wonderful, yes. Yeah. So that is happening there, and it's a detoxification retreat with lots of meditation and lots of interesting things that we look more deeply into. Otherwise, many things are online, so if you go onto the website, there are courses and seminars that anyone can join from wherever in the world because it's online. And, yeah, and I think just having listened to some of the things that we're both speaking about and putting that into practice is such an amazing step, you know, that can not just be healthy for oneself, but also if you have children or if you have family or people that you love around you, it inspires the same positive steps for others to look at and say, oh, wow, that looks interesting. That's an interesting way of looking at life, or that's a beautiful way of being positive, and inspires people to do the same. So by example, I think, is such an it's a very powerful way, by example.
Well, I thank you so much, Tony. This has been very interesting, and I was kind of shocked when she told me that I could ask you anything and you'd respond. So I appreciate it very much. It's been very informative, and I'm sure that it will be useful to a lot of people.
Yes, I've enjoyed very much speaking to you, and I do hope it's an inspiration for those listening to take that step and say yes to the beauty of life.
Right. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com.